I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, to the red, white and buffalo blues, a UK Bills podcast, Bills news with a UK twist, and it's Josh Allen week. 7 days, well, when we recorded this, to the NFL draft, and it's me and Robin on the show today. We've got a couple of good, great guests lined up. We've got Simon Carroll, and we've got Damon Tolbert, who is the cousin of Ryan Tolbert. You know, and but I have to say, after interviewing him, I hope Ryan doesn't listen to this, actually, probably the better looking one. although he did ask me to say that, so I'm going to leave that for them to settle. But Robin, how are you doing, and are you looking forward to this next week?
It's getting really, really close now, isn't it? It's seven days away. All the mocks are firming up. You've got a lot of excitement. There's going to be a lot of happy people. There's going to be a lot of... I think this is going to be a wide open draft. I think there's going to be a lot of surprises in this one. And I have a funny feeling almost no one will know who the Bills pick first round, if you want to know what I think. I think it's going to be something unexpected. I don't think we're going to see it coming. But I did want to make mention of one thing. They did the first voluntary workouts at One Bills Drive. So they do their obligatory press conferences that have come in, and Brandon Bean was there. Brandon Bean's always interesting. Sean McDermott always says absolutely nothing, which is you know, it's just adorable at this point, the fact that he says nothing. But there was a couple of things I did want to mention. It was the first time I'd really seen much of Von Miller, actually, at a press conference. Yeah. And there's just two things that flew off. A few people talk about it later. He introduced himself, all the guys in the locker room, the ones that were there, he introduced himself by saying, "Hello, I'm Von Miller from Texas A&M, his college, and I play defense." And that's all he said. He didn't talk about his Super Bowl rings. He didn't talk about his money. He didn't talk about, "I'm Von Miller, who the hell are you?"
Yeah.
He was, "I'm Von Miller, I'm from Texas A&M, I play defense." And I just thought, yeah, you're going to fit in just fine, my friend. You are going to be.
No, I mean, these presses, especially the week before, are quite interesting. Because I think, what was it? He said that they're looking to add speed a bit more. They're not ruling out specific positions on there. And yeah, this whole week is now where the smoke screens really come up.
Yeah.
Where you say, oh yeah, we're really into this person. Okay, someone's going to jump in front of us. Ha ha, psych. Didn't want him after all. You've wasted a pick on him. We think it's a reach. We're going to take the guy that we actually do want. So,
yeah,
it is.
You have agents leaking sort of names being linked to teams as well, aren't you? For various reasons. All amounts of skullduggery, isn't it? But only 7 days to go.
Exactly. So, without further ado, what we're going to do is we introduce our first guest. It's Simon Carroll from The Touchdown. Now, people who have been listening to the show previously will know that he's come on, and every time we come on, we do really talk prospects and get to know these prospects. And some of these names, because we're speaking to him about rounds 1 to 3, you will know, and you will be smashing the table saying, "Yes, I agree. And maybe some names that you may think, okay, not really heard him in that conversation, but it's always a great listen. So without further ado, here is our interview with Simon Carroll. Joining us on the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, we have one of my favourite draftees, and I have quite a few many of them. It's Simon Carroll. Simon, welcome back to the show. Thank you for coming on.
I appreciate you having me, Matt. Thank you.
Last draft series, wasn't it? Last draft season, the last time you came on, gave us a bit of insight, and it was actually very eye-opening, really.
Yeah. Enjoy our yearly chats where you try and catch me out and spring on me like prospects I've never heard of, just to, you know, call my NFL draft status into question from the get-go. I do enjoy it.
Yeah, I would do some of this today, but we're going rounds 1 to 3, so I don't think I'll be able to catch you out as much as I did last time. So you got off lightly.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
So obviously, for people that are probably new to the show and all that, and probably haven't heard your previous times on the show, just obviously tell us just how you got into the scouting world, so to speak.
Wow, so this is a long time ago now. I've been enjoying the NFL since probably about 2002, 2003, basically when I first went to university. I think the first draft I ever watched it was the 2008 draft with Matt Ryan was the third quarterback. Jake Long was the number one overall pick for the Dolphins, and Matt Ryan was the first quarterback off the board. So I started from that point on. I've got a very compulsive personality. So from that point on, this draft thing, had no idea, totally obsessed with it. By 2009, the year after, I was fully into looking at prospects at college football and seeing, you know, how it translates to the NFL. In 2009, I started a website called NFL Draft UK, and I did that for about 10 years until and that was very much an amateurish kind of site, just me and my opinions of the prospects, kind of like the bigger names. And then 2019, a good friend of mine, Dan Gorolov, came to me and a couple of other guys and said, shall we create this super UK website called The Touchdown? And the idea was it would be like a one-stop shop for everything you need. So, of course, on The Touchdown, we've got the NFL side of things, the college football, the draft, and we've got fantasy football, betting, absolutely anything you can think of. So we did that in 2019. We met up down in London, and we were invited down to check out the NFL Academy anyway. So we were down there, and we set it all up. And in 2019, that was July. So 2020 was our first draft as part of the Touchdown, and we killed it. We've got a great team of writers at the Touchdown. I think there's about 15 of us in total, and then we have guest writers as well. But there's about 6 or 7 of us really focusing on the draft at this time of year. And every year is exactly the same, but this year I think we've scouted 306 prospects. We've had so far 14 prospect interviews. We've got mock drafts, big boards, you know, everything you can think of that you look forward to at this time of year, we try and do, basically. But we obviously try and put a bit of a UK spin on it, but our website in general has got very much an international feel about it now, because a lot of our writers are American, a lot of our readers are American. So it's kind of come full circle, and it, without doubt, is my favourite time of year. Really. And I love this kind of thing, coming on with like the different team podcasts and discussing what they could do. And as always, as it has been for a couple of years now, the Buffalo Bills are one of the more interesting teams to look at, because quite frankly, you could go any direction you bloody well please.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, let's drop into it. I mean, we've got 25, no glaring need, okay, apart from really cornerback 2. Do you see, before we get into talking prospects and all that, do you see that being the pick at 25, or judging by what you've actually seen with the free agency and the way the draft could set the Bills going in a different direction?
Well, I think with the Buffalo Bills, you've got a very, very solid and well-respected front office, haven't you? Brandon Bean, he's got tenure there now. So I think what that gives that organisation and that kind of regime in our organization is tenure, is a kind of job security. So without doubt, I would agree with you. I would say that the cornerback 2, you know, opposite Trey White, who himself has obviously got an injury concern, is probably the major focus of the first round. But that's not to say they'll go that direction, and the pure fact of the matter is they're not going to let chase the board. I think they're going to let the board come to them. You're sitting at 25. The better teams do this year in, year out, and it's what makes you keep to being the better teams. I mean, look at Baltimore, year in, year out, they don't panic about the draft, they don't reach, they don't go draft on position, they take best player available for the most part. They have done ever since Ozzie Newsom's been there, and somehow talent always seems to fall to them, and that's how they maintain that kind of upper echelon status in the NFL. And I think the Buffalo Bills are in that similar regard. So as well as cornerback, I've seen interior defensive lines position. I know you guys have, it's kind of a revamped spot on your team, a lot of talent in and out, but you know, I think that's potential in round one, someone to go alongside Ed Oliver as a true, you know, starter there. Wide receiver, obviously, you've lost a couple of names there in Cole Beasley and Emmanuel Sanders, but I don't know if they'll hit that quite that early. And then, I mean, classic, much like every team, they're going to try and strengthen everywhere, aren't they? But I've seen some people mute offensive line again. I don't think you're quite settled on the bottom. So we've looked at cornerback, obviously. you know, interior defensive line and wide receiver. I'd say they're the three major areas you're probably focusing on early in the draft if you can, if it works that way.
Yeah.
And then classic Bills fashion, as you get to maybe late and back end of day two, who's going to stop Brandon Bean from taking his yearly third round running back? Not me. And maybe offensive line too, because whilst you've got some good pieces there, I'm not sure you're quite set on the five starters, as you know, which are your best five, maybe, so to speak. So I would like to target. I don't think that they're shoehorned into any particular order, but I do think that obviously the most pressing need is cornerback.
Yeah. I mean, Robin, you had a question that he came online, talk to me about, see what you want to ask. You can ask him.
About cornerback or anything?
Oh, just about the pick 25.
I was going to ask Simon, just because of your sort of experience in the draft, how it goes in. It's not specifically a Bills question, but I think it's probably going to be of interest. Well, I hope it is anyway. Let me ask the question and see how interesting it is when it comes out. So I've been reading quite a few mock drafts, and I've read several where there is zero quarterbacks going in the first round. And that hasn't happened for quite a while. And the general sense of quarterback is, now I put this from my smug little perch, that we have our quarterback, we've been through it. And so it's more of a general question of the NFL. Given how desperate teams always are for that number one position, do you think there are going to be reaches into the first round? Do you think there are quarterbacks right now being talked up, their project, you know, that they're going to be fast tracks, that they're going to reach into the first round to try and get a number of quarterbacks? And I do remember EJ Manuel, nice guy, but I don't think was ever a first rounder.
I think EJ Manuel's a starting man of what happens when you do reach, but that's exactly what happens every year. And even if you think that some of these prospects are first round quality, which they are, they're still going to be reached for. So say like the top two guys in Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett, if you're looking at your big board and most people's big boards, I would argue that most people don't have them much higher than maybe 15 or 20. Mm. But Malik Willis will go in the top 10. He will go in the top 10, I would imagine. And Kenny Pickett probably will follow him, because without doubt, the most important position on the football field, as the Buffalo Bills will attest to, is quarterbacks. Yeah. Because, you know, it transforms your team, doesn't it? I remember Josh Allen being in the draft, and I remember penciling him into the Bills. I just thought it was a natural fit. The classic cliche of the blue-collar guy. And I got lambasted on social media regarding the idea. Said, he's not the kind of quarterback we want. And lo and behold, they're quite very quiet about that now. You know, but the thing with quarterback is, it's exactly the same as many other positions in that you have to take risks in the draft. There's no sure thing in the draft at all. People say there's like low, high floors, and, you know, and it's a phrase that I use as well. But it doesn't disguise the fact that they can completely bomb. I mean, we've seen Vernon Golston at the Jets. We've seen Curry, who came out of Wake Forest, went to the Seahawks fourth overall, Alan Curry. And they just did nothing for their careers. You know, and the same...
Maybe
another name, although he did have a bit of a renaissance, didn't he?
Yeah.
So a lot of it's fit and things like that. But to answer your question, Robin, people will reach. And they always reach at the bottom of the first round as well, because of the fifth-year option you get as a first-round player, much more valuable in a quarterback because teams try and win with a quarterback on a rookie deal, because it means they can spend money, allocate money elsewhere. The minute you have to pay a quarterback, it means you start taking money out of other positions, and it makes the job harder. So teams do like to get that fifth year option on a quarterback, and that's why you often see teams jump back into the first round at the bottom end, picks 31, picks 32 for a quarterback, much like Lamar Jackson did for Baltimore, mm-hmm. because they want that fifth year. And this year is an interesting option, because somebody might do that just to jump over, of course, a team at 32 who needs a quarterback. So Detroit, you don't normally get people need quarterbacks picking 32, but because it's Detroit this year, teams might jump into number 31 to try to get above them and get a guy who may be tumbling down a little bit, or a guy who they really have maybe fallen in love in the process, such as Desmond Ridder.
Yeah, I think that's the good thing about that fifth year, and obviously being a team like the Bills, obviously like the Chiefs and all that, that got to the Super Bowl, the playoffs and all that, that they don't have that need, and you are going to get those teams that want to take that fifth year option that retakes it, that gives you a bit more ammo and a bit more intrigue in trading back to garner more picks, only then to trade up later round to drop trading back into the second round, picking up like a fourth or fifth, and using that to trade up to the third round and all that. So it's always it's something that is definitely worthy of actually looking at.
Yeah, I mean, it's one big game of chess, isn't it, essentially? It's hard to appreciate. I guess you sit in a position on a draft board and you see what comes your way. And if you're not happy, if you're a team that considers positional need when you're picking and you're not happy with the quality of players for the value you're getting there, you can consider moving back. You can consider moving up if you, obviously, if you, again, you've got, like, I mean, I've seen some big trades on draft day as well. The one where the Falcons traded, I think it was 19 picks to go and get Julio Jones was phenomenal. It cost them an absolute arm and a leg. But you can't tell anybody that it didn't pan out for him. I mean, he had eight 1,000-yard seasons. He was well worth the pick. Yeah. It was amazing. At the same time, we see similar teams trade back all the time. The Patriots do it all the time. And whilst their early round drafting might be suspect, it does give them the later round capital, which they're so good at drafting with. So overall, everyone's, and then there's some teams you just eschew the draft altogether. The Rams, I mean, they haven't picked, I can't remember now, 5 years, they haven't picked in the first round. Since they took Jared Goff, they haven't picked in the first round. And they won't be picking this year or next year either. So it's quite, that's going to be 8 years before they have a first round pick, at least unless they somehow manage to trade up. I can't see that with the lack of capital. So yeah, every team's got different ways of doing it. There's no right or wrong way. Otherwise, the Rams would never have won a Super Bowl if you have to build for the draft. But it's very intriguing. That's why it's my favourite time of the year, really, guys, because you just don't know what's going to happen. It's like a drama for nerds sat on the sofa with pens and paper and laptops open and everyone thinking they know different, and no one really does. So that's the best thing about it all.
No, I mean, What your board, when you put your prospects all on there, you grade them all. I know Brendan Bean in his presser yesterday actually said he doesn't think he has 25 first round grade or first round graded players on there. I just been interested, how many players have you got with a first round grade on your board?
Right, this is interesting because I don't grade players. No, I don't grade players because I don't think I'm qualified to do so. I mean, I've scouted for a long time and I've done scouting courses with the Scouting Academy and things like that. But I think it's people putting arbitrary numbers to a player and comparing it with a completely different position. And I don't think you can quite do that, really. You can say players who you think are first round worthy and who aren't. I tend to, in my prospect reports, we put a projection where we think they're going to come off the board based on public opinion, based on how good they are, that kind of thing. But I would argue I'm kind of in agreement with Brandon in that there is certainly a tail off towards the bottom end. When, if you try and do a mock draft, for instance, there's 20 names you know are going in that draft. Bang. No messing around. And after that, then you start thinking, well, is that a guy you really want to put in the first round?
Yeah.
I mean, as we get closer and closer to draft, you can feel more comfortable with it. But when you get to the second round, I won't call this a bad draft at all. I know a lot of people have said that. I think there's a depth of talent at certain positions, but others, they're a bit sketchy. So you get to the second round and a similar thing happens. You think, is that a second round player, really? Is that, I mean, not only in your own opinion, but in like consensus opinion, is that really someone who's going to make it into second round or day two, for instance? You know, it's an intriguing one. I'm not as down on this class, and I know my good friend Oliver Hodgkinson from PFN as well, he's not down on it either. I think people just assume it because the quarterback group may not be the most stellar group we've ever seen, means that the whole draft's not great. But we've got another great wide receiver group, as we always have to. Linebackers are deep as hell. The cornerbacks, there's so many good cornerbacks out there. So it's actually working out quite well for the Buffalo Bills here with some positions there that you can dip into in later rounds. I just think that people who say stuff like that, just I don't know if they really delve in deep enough to understand just how talented these guys are that are out there, because there's a lot of talent to be had. It's kind of condensed. There's a lot of players from the big schools, and then there's pockets of players where you have to really look for them. So I would argue that I can see his point when he says that the first round grades. I think what they call them is blue chip prospects, don't they? Guys that they know, they would stake their life on that they are going to be big time 5 year players and then a second contract. And there is the outside chance that there's going to be a few more names in this first round that might not quite have that upside.
Yeah. So let's move on to obviously the positions. And what we'll do is we're going to go through each position and just get you to rattle off a few names that you think could be Bill's targets in those first three rounds. And also, Robin probably have a couple of players he just wants to talk about. I definitely have two players I really want to get someone's opinion about, other than me just having to constantly defend him for. So let's start with obviously the major need on there and cornerback. And one guy that most people will know me and seen in our group chats will pound the table for, and I just want to get your opinion, that could be that borderline, as you say, first, second round pick, Kaiir Elam of Florida. Just want to get your opinion, get someone to try and back me up that he's worthy of that, that potentially a 25, but a first round high second round pick.
So, yeah, I would argue the bottom of the first round, obviously, we're talking about cornerbacks here. This is where the Bills are going to hopefully look at, I imagine, initially, if they can. And Kaiir Elam's definitely in that range, but I've seen him go as low as mid to late second round as well. And that's because he's quite a polarizing prospect. A lot of the Florida cornerbacks are. There's been people bitten and burned by these Florida corners before. I mean, CJ Henderson's an obvious one who got traded from the Jaguars to the Panthers recently. He was a, like a top 10 pick and, again, hasn't quite lived up to the height. And I think maybe Elam's battling that a little bit. But he's a very long, tall corner. He's got all the measurements you want. You know, he's quite physical as well. I don't know if that... I mean, the good thing about Kaiir Elam is he's kind of like scheme diverse. So yeah. I would argue he's very good at press. And I know that the Buffalo Bills do a lot of zone, which may be why you don't necessarily hear his name mocked to the Bills as much as others. But I think he's competent in all forms of coverage, really. And at the catch point, he's an absolute animal. So there's that about him as well. I think he's got kind of the demeanor you look for a Buffalo Bill. I think the big name that everyone hopes to drop down a little bit might be Trent McDuffie from Washington, because he's such a proficient zone corner who can also play the slot. You know, he offers that positional versatility. I think personally, if I don't see him getting past Arizona, but if he did, I think he would be the guy that maybe you want to, because I don't think you're going to the top three names fall as far as 25, unfortunately for you guys. I really couldn't tell you what Brandon Bean thinks, obviously, of either Elam or McDuffie, but if you don't fancy those there, we'll come back to it in round two, your second pick. There's still going to be some talent there. And like I say, it's so deep, this class. You're going to find a guy that fits the kind of mold that you're looking for, the kind of position you want. But I would argue that Kaiir Elam is a borderline first-round prospect, and the Bills makes some sense. So you're not out on a limb too much there, Matt, buddy. I would argue, for me, I've got him as a second-round player, but only because I think there is that kind of perception that he is a little bit boom or bust.
Yeah,
but I mean, the upside's terrific.
People say he can't tackle, but I always go, he can tackle. He just needs to improve the technique. I don't know if you've seen that with him, and if you can back me up that he can tackle, not he can't tackle.
It's a frequent thing with draft prospect players who he brings physicality to every play. He's lightning quick across the field. I mean, he ran a 4.34. 40-yard dash, so he can move to get the kid. So he's obviously going and hitting people hard and fast, which obviously means a tackle. Now, general managers and scouts will look at that and think, well, he's got the good attitude, he's got the athleticism, he's got the measurables, and we can teach him how to tackle properly. So that's why his name's still up there, whereas other guys might be sure tacklers but can't get there, at which point you can't teach speed, as Al Davis frequently said. So that's why their names aren't at the top of the draft board. So at least Kaiir Elam is maybe lacking in things that he can correct. And I think that's maybe why people still have him quite high up. But yeah, there's always that. He's not the complete prospect, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here. Yeah. He's not like Stingley or Sauce Gardner or Andrew Booth, I would argue. But yeah, certainly floating around that range where the Buffalo Bills could pique their interest.
Yeah. I mean, Robin, have you got any cornerback names that you're intrigued about?
Well, you already mentioned Andrew Booth Jr. That was you took that one right out, because I've seen quite a few mock drafts with him going at 25. I'm just scrambling back through my names now just to fill the time. But the question I was going to ask, and you've already mentioned it, Simon, there, which is about the depth of the player. The assumption is, as we've sort of begun the conversation, is that the Bills pick at 25 and they pick cornerback because of all the obvious positions, that's the one that they need. But is the counterpoint to that, if the cornerback depth is so strong, and if you don't get Sauce Gardner, and that's a sub question 2A, which is, do you trade up for Sauce Gardner, since that's the player you really want, for instance, you know, one of the absolute top tier. If it's Sauce Gardner, Booth Jr., you know, one other, but everyone else is kind of much of a muchness. Is there an argument, therefore, that you either trade back or go somewhere else at 25, given that you can get someone of comparable value in the second round?
This is the game, isn't it? So this is why, I mean, I could talk about, I've started doing my 7-round mega mock, which I drop on the Monday every year. And I've been, obviously, the Bills is part of that. And I didn't mock a cornerback for that particular reason. By the time it got to the Bills, Trent McDuffie had gone off the board. And I thought, well, I didn't really want to reach for a cornerback necessarily so much. When, in my opinion, I think that there's a very real chance that the Buffalo Bills want to strengthen that interior of that defensive line. And that's a position that's top heavy and then goes quite quiet after a certain spot. So there is that balance of question where Brandon Bean will be thinking, well, if we come back to cornerback in the second round, is it 50 something or other?
57. Yeah.
You know, we're still looking at some prospects like Kyler Gordon, who I think is a phenomenal cornerback. He's there. Trent McDuffie's a cornerback partner at Washington. He's one of my favourite cornerbacks in this draft, Kyler Gordon. And I can see a team like Buffalo playing that game because they might look at the interior defensive line. They might see someone fall to them like Jordan Davis, who's been, because obviously he had a massive combine and was mocked to the Chargers. I think his stock's just tempered a little bit, which it should do because, you know, numbers are just numbers at the end of the day. And as good as they are, you know, you've got to balance it against the tape. And his tape is fantastic when he's on the field, but he's not always on the field. And there's a little risk with it. But if he falls to 25, after him, after Jordan Davis, which means that Devontae Wyatt's already gone, you're going to struggle to find another guy that's going to be there when the Bills next pick until maybe the fourth or the fifth round. I assume with Ed Oliver up front as well, playing the three tech, who's naturally good at being like a kind of an interior pass rusher, I would argue the Bills might be looking for someone more of a run stuffer up front on there. At which point you could think, well, I'll get Jordan Davis in the first round and then I'll come back for a cornerback in the second. So that's the whole reason why teams don't always go for their biggest needs, because they're playing the long game. I guess it's the some value you get out of your draft versus the needs you have. And I think you're right, Robin, there's a very real chance that the Buffalo Bills look at this cornerback group and go, wow, there is some real good names down there that we like in our scheme in particular. Because they might take a guy in this second round. Other people might look at Kyler Gordon and thinking, Simon, why do you like him so much? You know, he doesn't fit the Dolphins' secondary vibe at all, you know, or this team or that team. And I'm going to think, well, no, maybe he doesn't. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it? I guess that you could look down that list and there's loads of Montarek Brown from Arkansas. I think he might be there on day three somehow. He's ridiculously good. You know, there's ridiculous players in this draft at cornerback. So yeah, to answer your question, very much so, that's a possibility. And it's kind of like something they battle throughout the draft. They've got these names of lists of guys on the board. They've probably got 150 names on the board, and there'll be names on there that they really want them all of. And I don't know if you saw that clip of the Eagles front office last year where they missed out on a prospect they picked before, and one of the scouts was furious. He's like, he refused to shake the hand of the GM after they'd made the selection because he was so gutted that he'd missed out on this guy. And I think that's going to happen. So, yeah, I think I would argue there's a real chance here that the Buffalo Bills target cornerback in round two or three.
So based on that then, round two and round three, what are some of the names that you think you're looking at on that? I mean, you've got the likes of Tariq Woolen is a guy that he's raw, but he is actually, he's coachable. I mean, there's a favourite of the Bills Mafia, which is Cam Taylor-Britt as well. But there are quite a few decent cornerbacks in the second, third round. What sort of names really would you be looking at?
At 57, like I mentioned, Kyler Gordon, an all-round corner, he'd probably start off in the slot and move to the outside maybe after a year or so. But I think he's phenomenal talent. Just his intuitiveness, his instincts for the game, uncoachable. For me, he's a great talent. You've mentioned Tariq Woolen. He's probably a second-round pick now. He's 6'3". He's got monster arms, and he runs sub 4.3, 40. They're the numbers you can play with. You know, obviously, like you say, a bit raw, play for UTSA, a smaller school, so there's going to be a bit more of a learning curve for him, which I think the Buffalo Bills are a team in a good position who can kind of accommodate to some extent. So he's very much a name that you could put into the Bills category there as well. And I like Roger McCreary too. Now, McCreary is a pure press corner. He's very physical at line of scrimmage. And I don't know if that necessarily fits the Bills scheme, but what I watched a lot of Auburn this year, and I was very impressed with McCreary and what he can offer. He's a guy, if he falls into the second round, he's great value too. And then, of course, in the third round, which you might go as far as the third round, you've mentioned Cam Taylor-Britt, a really elegant kind of cornerback, plays the ball very well. I like Martin Emerson, who's from Mississippi State. He's got major long arms, a real feisty corner. And again, I mentioned Montaric Brown as well, who's got this kind of instinctive ball hawk who kind of anticipates tips somehow. You know, he's there seeming to catch balls or tips, which are miles away from him. He's run to the position with a good and big tip before he's even seen a tip. I don't understand how he... it's beyond me how good he is. But yeah, there are three names I would consider in round three. So that, to me, at every stage there, you're potentially getting a starting cornerback, certainly as a CB2. So the question becomes, will they still be on the board at that point? Do they fit the scheme? And are they worth holding out for so you can bolster other positions?
Yeah. I think one position or one player that's polarizing to me, because I've seen different scouts mock and different analysts mock him at different positions, I'll just see how he would fit with the Bills, is Daxon Hill.
Oh, yes. Now, I love Daxon Hill. Again, this is right. Okay, so Daxon Hill's a Michigan safety. Obviously, very scheme diverse and very positionally diverse. He can play all over your back end. So you're looking at maybe free safety. He can come down to the box, play strong safety. You can play him at a slot corner. I would argue you could even push him to an outside corner. It won't be his most natural position. And how he fits with the Bills, I guess, is in the eye of the beholder, really. And of course, you've got a very strong secondary outside of the CB2 spot, haven't you, with Poyer and Mika Hyde there. But the two guys are, you know, the kind of veteran players, and they might want somebody else in there. And someone bringing someone like Hill in, who can play a myriad of roles, does make sense. I guess it all depends on your defensive coordinator, how exotic his packages are. I mean, I can see teams who love to get crazy on defense, you know, traditional teams like the New England Patriots, for instance. I pretty much mock Dax Hill to the Patriots every single mock draft I do, because I just think that Bill Belichick will have absolute whale of a time putting him in the Devin McCourtney role, who's obviously getting old, and moving him around. So you might end up playing him rather than having him on your own team there, Matt, if I have my way.
That's true.
But yeah, he's a phenomenal prospect. I mean, he's come quite up on the rails quite quickly. Something to consider when you look at mock drafts, or if you look at the draft itself, is the ascension of prospect stock up and down. You know, there's, to get off subject a little bit, there's a tight end called Jalen Weidemeyer from Texas A&M, who's one of the most... He's going to be lucky to be drafted because he's paid zero attention to the pre-draft process. He's a bit lazy, and he's run a 5-second 40-yard dash, and no tight end who's run that slow has ever been drafted. So he's got second round talent, but he might not get drafted at all. So whereas there's other people who, not just the combine guys who do really well with the measurements, but people who kind of get this buzz about them and then show out well at the pro days, or who interview very well with scouts, who disseminate information via the media, you know. And Dax Hill is one of these guys. Lewis Seen's another one, who are slowly creeping up. The safeties in this class are another good group. And I do like Dax Hill. And I do think that if he went to Buffalo, he wouldn't even need to be particularly a straight-up starter straight away, but he could fill a lot of roles, you know. And I think that kind of depth is what championship-caliber teams like the Buffalo Bills are right now could look for.
Robin, what position do you want to go to next, Robin?
I did have a question about interior or just general offensive line. There's something Jeff Reinbold was mentioning on the Sky Sports podcast. He said he felt it was a very, very good draft for interior offensive line. And I was just thinking about the Bills on it. We've got Ryan Bates, or Rick Bates, as we like to call him. He's back as the guard. He's also the backup center. We've just extended Mitch Morse with the center as well. But again, deep draft, interior offensive line. I always like to try and think 2-3 years ahead. What might be available, let's say, in the center position, you know, as a possible project replacement, thinking two, three years from now, later.
Yeah.
On.
I don't think the Bills are quite set on that interior. They seem to move around. I don't think Cody Ford's quite panned out as what they wanted either, has he, really, to be quite honest. And I think it's something that they might address later in the draft. And I think it's when you get into that position in the interior offensive line, you get a lot of versatility. Guys, you can place, you know, kind of set a guard or set or center. So for that, you want to look at some prospects like Cole Strange, a kid from Tennessee Chattanooga, who's a small school kid who's, again, it's been very difficult to find tape on the guy. I had the pleasure of vicious kid. He's something else. He's an utter monster. And he played left. He didn't play a snap on offense at high school. got recruited by Chattanooga and they just threw some knee brace at him and said, right, go and line up at left guard. And he played left guard like the most natural thing in the world. He won awards. He got invited to the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of the best. Obviously, there's a lot of questions about him because he hasn't played that much at the position. He's raw and he's a small schooler. But he's the kind of guy you want to develop. And at the Senior Bowl, they just made him play centre. And he's only ever taken a couple of snaps at centre. And he found it tough going at first. But he's so competitive. By the game, at the end of the week, he was competing. He was proficient at the position. This is the kind of guy you're insane at. And if you're looking for another name in similar vein, who's kind of coming up as well in terms of like people thinking he could be a future starter, Cameron Juergens, he's a speedy center, a guy who can move. And I know the Buffalo Bills like to run a lot of zone, use a lot of zone blocking schemes in the run game, and he can block on the move. So he's another guy you might want to look at on the inside. But I know what Jeff's saying when he says that there's a lot of talent in this interior offensive line. There is, and it's always a fun position to scout because you get a lot of finesse guys. Like maybe Alec Lindstrom, a center from Boston College, who I also interviewed. He's a guy who his technique is phenomenal. He's impeccable every time, and he has to be because he's sub 300 pounds. And then you get guys like Darian Kinnaird from Kentucky, who are just absolute maulers, monsters. And they'll just basically live to hit somebody in front of them and just drive them into the ground and carry on doing it after the whistle, you know. And Kentucky offensive linemen are a bit like that, to be honest, and it's quite fun. But, there's certainly some talent later on in the draft to be had at that position. And my favourite, without being biased, I would say is Cole Strange.
That's cool. So the most debated position, I think, mainly for Bills fans, especially in these first few rounds, is wide receiver. Obviously, not the biggest of needs on there. Obviously, we've got Davis, we've got McKenzie, we've got obviously Stephon Diggs and all that. It's a sneaky need, let's put it that way. But there's been a lot of debates between us about which is the best fit for the Bills. I mean, in the three round, what are some of the names that you think are that bit rather than what they've actually produced, so say in college?
Yeah, I think this might come back to what Robin said about looking 2 or 3 years down the line. I think the Bills obviously got two fantastic receivers in Diggs and Davis on the outside, but if Davis turns in a career year, like I think everyone's expecting him to do so this season, certainly after that last game he played for Buffalo, then you're going to have some questions, well, some answers to make regarding money at that position at some point. Diggs just got paid a big contract. And what gives you leverage in such situations when Gabe Davis turns around and says, well, I want some money now, is the fact that you can have another wide receiver in the background ready to go. And of course, you have lost some guys at the position. And obviously, I don't think bringing Jameson Crowder is going to deter Brandon Bean from drafting a wide receiver. So depends what you want. I would argue you're probably looking for a wide receiver 3, maybe a slot guy. If you want immediate impact, or if you do want someone who can go play on the outside and be a replacement for one of those guys when you realize you don't want to allocate so much money to one position, that's the other alternative. But in terms of playing in Buffalo in the snow, I mean, Treylon Burks would be a fun watch, wouldn't he? If you really wanted to push the boat out and start targeting a wide receiver in round one, I would argue something like that, a big-bodied snatch-and-grab artist on the outside who doesn't necessarily explode out of his stance, but will basically run away from defenders with the football and then out physical them at the catch point. I think he's somebody who is really worth taking a look at if you're Buffalo. But I think, like I've mentioned before, I think round one's probably a little bit rich for a wide receiver for Buffalo. Yeah. But I like him. Get to the second round. I love Sky Moore, wide receiver from Western Michigan, who's a very quick, very savvy route runner who will probably translate well to the slot early in his career in the NFL, and then maybe move on the outside later on. I think he's a phenomenal wide receiver 3 somewhere. And I also like the snatch and grab artists, but that's what I call these wide receivers who I love watching, who just rip the soul out of defensive backs by just basically taking the football right out of the grasp, even though the body position is way out. So David Bell from Purdue, a really big receiver who has made a career out of just basically catching balls he has no right of catching, and then just trundling off to the end zone, no one can stop him. He's another guy, I think, if he falls to round 3, which he might do actually, because his workouts have not been stellar in terms of the numbers he's put up. I think he's another guy who's got kind of like first season impact ability, should I say. Not necessarily maybe the elite tier of wide receivers, you know, when you're looking at the Chris Olaves and the Drake Londons and whatnot of this world, but someone who can really make an impact year one. I really do like David Bell. He's a good one, but there are so many in this class wide receivers. I mean, literally depends. You want a nifty speed guy in the slot, go get yourself Calvin Austin, you know. Speed to die for, you know. So there's someone thing for everyone here. So if you guys want to fire some names at me, some guys you think will fit, I'll talk a little bit about them. I do not mind.
I've got three at least. I don't know how many you've got, Robin.
I'm not really about names. I'm more of a strategy guy than a names guy, really.
All right. I'll rattle my names off. It's George Pickens, mm-hmm. Alec Pierce, John Metchie, and I'm probably going to just put in there Jalen Tolbert.
Right. So George Pickens, I don't know if you've watched any tape of George Pickens, but he is an animal. And my favorite thing about George Pickens isn't even in playing as a receiver. It's when you're running the football and he's blocking. He just buries cornerbacks trying to get involved in the run game. He puts them in the turf. You can find at least four or five instances where he just literally thumps them into the turf and they're sat on the ground like, don't know what to do. He's phenomenal. Again, another real, obviously, target down the field. He works hard on the sidelines. He does very well with body control on the sidelines, as you're picking. So he doesn't get squeezed down what we call the red line, which is halfway between the numbers and the sideline on vertical routes. Cornerbacks will try and push you towards the sideline, try and limit the catch window. He refuses that to happen. He's very strong, I think he's going to go first round. I've started to see a little bit more buzz about him at the bottom end of the first round. And it makes sense because I think there are some teams at the bottom end of that first round with two picks who might want a wide receiver, and Pickens could be one of those guys. And in a similar vein, Alec Pierce is a very similar kind of prospect. The difference with Alec Pierce is that for a big kid, he can move. He's fast. Get up his measurables. The guy called Kent Lee Platt at Math Bomb, he does what's called a RAS score, a relative athletic score. Alec Pierce got a 9.62 out of 10, which is the 97th best out of 2,500 receivers in history. He ran a 4.41 40-yard dash, and this kid's 6'3" and 211 pounds.
Yeah.
So he's fast, he's big, and he had a hell of a career at Cincinnati, coming up in big moments as well. I mean, he's obviously been in some big moments on that football field, hasn't he? Playing Alabama in the national championship playoffs, you know. And without laboring the cliche too much, he's a guy who looks like he comes to, you know, he brings his lunch pail to work. A kid who really would fit in well with the Buffalo Bills, you know, the Bills Mafia, I think. So I do like Pierce as well. I really do. Metchie, I think he's going to fall a little bit, not just because of the injury, but I think he's more of a kind of like a solid possession receiver, maybe a slot receiver. I'm not sure that he's in the same kind of like echelons as these guys. And Jalen Tolbert, again, a small school kid, Jalen Tolbert of South Alabama, he's got speed too. So, but they're all good receivers who can move down the sidelines. Maybe Pickens is a little bit more physical than quick, I would argue. But yeah, those guys, most of them you're looking at second round. I think you might be able to sneak Tolbert in the third if you're lucky, and Metchie in the third too.
No, that's good. I mean, Robin, you like any of those names?
I did. I like John Metchie. He was my second round pick from last week's mock draft. So he's officially mine if the Bills. I'm taking credit for Metchie if the Bills have picked. But it's interesting what you said, because I was looking at it and he was one of the more highly rated receivers left, slot receiver at 57. But it's interesting what Simon was saying there about that he may fall to the third round. I'd like to get my quote in because I just want you to know I do some research. I remembered because I was reading a thing, Buddy Nix, who was our general manager, but I think two general managers ago.
Yeah.
And he was saying each college program each year probably has four or so starting wide receivers potentially reporting for the draft. Now, they don't all make it, of course. He said, but you've got a pool of talent there. If you add all the colleges up, he says you maybe have upwards or up to maybe 200 different receivers that may be reporting eligible for the draft. So the chances are, and of course we've got Gabe Davis. What did we get him? Round three, round four?
Four.
We got him round four. So wide receiver is surely one of those positions where the chances of you getting, you know, if you do your homework, getting the diamonds in the rough later on, rather than it being a first round pick.
No, without doubt. I mean, just look at the numbers. Darnell Mooney from Chicago, found him in the sixth round out of Tulane, starting wide receiver one now in Chicago, essentially.
Yeah.
Now that Alan Robinson's gone. I mean, we could go on all day with these names.
Yeah, that's true.
There's so many of them. I mean, who heard of Jameson Crowder or Zay Jones out coming out of college? You know, there's plenty. And certainly if you get one who fits your scheme and does a role that you need doing, it's kind of the money ball aspect of it. There's always value. And there's going to be guys go off this board that I've never heard of. That's just the way it happens every year. Guys I've not scouted, guys... not necessarily even from small schools either. Just people are just, there's not been enough kind of like, I don't know, buzz around them.
Yeah.
To some extent, some of these real small school kids, and they call it breaking the bus, I think, on the NFL Network, where they've got like a truck outside with all the like the graphics guy sat there, and they put it on the screen. And I think when Mike Mayock, who used to obviously be on the network coverage, he was the GM of the Raiders, he texted one of the hosts saying, oh, did we break the bus with this pick? And it was some kid out of like the most remote college I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
I don't think he panned out. I think he did it just for effect on TV, but who knows. But getting back to your Metchie argument, Robin, he's definitely a slot receiver. I'm a bit concerned about his measurables, essentially, in that if you look at his height, his weight, his wingspan, his arm length, nothing tops the 27th percentile in the NFL. I mean, we are talking, of course, about an Alabama prospect here. Which means that he's going to be excellently coached. He's going to have that work ethic and that commitment. But when you pair those measurements with essentially the season-ending injury he had right at the end of last season, I think that will see his stock tumble a little bit.
So what I'm going to do for the last little bit, there's one question I want, well, two players I definitely want to just quickly pick your brains about in a minute. And it's the two Brits there actually in the draft and with Ojabo and Olusemi. But just out some of the other positions from round 1 to 3, just if you have any names that you think the Bills Mafia should actually start looking at in regards to other positions that they could target in round 1 to 3.
Yeah, round 1. I honestly think the interior defensive line is in play. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying if it does, you want to look at the two Georgia boys. Devontae Wyatt, I think, is the better one out of the two because he's multi-skilled, but that's not to say he fits the scheme just any better than Jordan Davis, who is a true run stuffer and has got stupid measurables. So I'd certainly take a look at those two just in case. I don't think they will go interior offensive line round 1. I think, like Robin says, they'll look for value later on. But if so, obviously the Zion Johnsons and the Kenyon Greens of the world will be in play around that pick as well. Get to round 2. We've talked for the cornerbacks. I think that the Bills could pull the trigger on a running back in round 2 if, say, any running back going in the first round at all.
Yeah.
So then you're going to get to the second round and the Cardinals, who seem to be sniping you, firstly with Trent McDuffie in the first round, but potentially with a running back in the second round. I'm arguing that if one of those big names is on the board, I think the Bills, just because you're so solid in general across the board, you could think, right, whilst, you know, Singletary's flashed and Zach Moss has flashed, let's just go out and get a guy who's going to be a workhorse running back. And then what the hell do defenses do then?
Yeah.
Who are they combating there? Because at the moment, they're essentially selling out on the pass, aren't they, to try and stop Josh Allen. Or sell out on Josh Allen, maybe even if he's not passing it. But I would argue if someone like Breece Hall or Kenny Walker's there in round 2, that's certainly an option. And then round 3, we mentioned the cornerbacks. If they do go for the interior defensive lineman in round 3, there's a guy called Matthew Butler from Tennessee, who is one of my favourites. So explosive off the line of scrimmage. Keep an eye out for him, guys. The wide receiver's definitely in play at this point, and we've talked about a few names, but someone like Khalil Shakir later on draft as well, who's from Boise State. He's a guy who just catches everything thrown his way when he's not got no right to. And there's a big guy called Eric Etzekama from Texas Tech, who hasn't really put it all together at college, but he's flashed, and in the red zone, he's unplayable. He's a real height, length, speed kind of guy. And then maybe, obviously, if you don't go running back second round, there's round 3 running backs that they're going to be there. You know, you're looking at certainly, if you want a pass catching one as well, you know, teams like James Cook or Tyler Beatty, or if you want a beast, you know, someone like Jerome Ford from Cincinnati or Damian Pierce from Florida. And then one name who's coming, sneaking up the rails as well, is a guy called Zach Tom from Wake Forest in the third round, who is an offensive lineman who played 2 years at center and then got kicked out to left tackle, played 2 years there and dominated at both. He's got short arms, so he might want to be a center-only prospect. But if you're looking for that interior offensive lineman, certainly a center that could possibly be the heir apparent to Mitch Morse, then maybe Zach Tom's your name.
Yeah. So just one quick one, I say, before we get to the Brits. Rank these 3 or 4 linebackers that I think the second, third round, what we've seen, Troy Anderson, Brian Asamoah, Channing Tindall, and Brandon Smith.
Okay, so Brandon Smith would be my lowest one because I've got a problem with Penn State prospects. And I think I'm biased, so don't take that too much to heart. Troy Anderson is the most ridiculous prospect I've ever scouted. Yeah. He is. Kid from Montana State. He comes in as a running back to Montana State. Second year, he's playing running back and linebacker. Third year, they don't have a quarterback. So he just drops down to heels and becomes their quarterback and wins conference honors doing it. And then the final season, reverts back to linebacker. And quite rightly so, he's focusing on linebacker. His measurables are insane. So I would have him quite high. I'd have him as the second out of the four. Channing Tindall, he's a guy who's sneaking up the rails a little bit as kind of like the third Georgia linebacker of the group, because of course you've got N'Kobe Dean, who's potentially a first round pick, and you've got Quay Walker, who's also getting a lot of buzz at the moment in the second round. Channing Tindall might be the most balanced out of the three. He might not have the numbers, the explosions of the other guys, but he's very well rounded, surefire prospect with great tackling technique. I quite like him. I wouldn't get too excited about him, but I do quite like him. But I am in love, and it's not easy for me to say that considering I'm a Texas Longhorns fan. But Brian Asamoah is he's lightning in a bottle. He's just ridiculous. If you're looking for a Will linebacker to line up on that side of your you know, off the ball, he will hunt down the football from the back end all day with glee. And he's got some production issues, so he's got to kind of ramp it up when he gets the lead. But he's kind of, from my, obviously, exposures to him, my three or four games of tape I watched, I just think that he's nowhere near the football player he can be as of yet. Yeah. And I honestly think that he will be something special in the NFL if he lands in the right spot. I'm panicking like hell that he's going to go to Kansas City and torture the Chargers for the next decade.
So, quickly then, Bam Osalemi and David Ojabo. Obviously, Ojabo's had his Achilles, which probably knocks him out the first. Obviously, people are saying it's knocking him out the first round. Where can we really see what they can do and the ceiling for them?
Well, both are obviously raw prospects. Now, let's start with David Ojabo, obviously an edge rusher from Michigan who played a couple of years at Michigan after coming from Aberdeen, which is an amazing story in itself. His family from Nigeria, born in Nigeria, moved to Aberdeen, which is, you know, an unusual relocation at the best of times, and then over to Michigan. So an interesting life so far. And of course, he did have the Achilles injury on his pro day, which was heartbreaking to see. He's always been a bit of there is a little bit of boom or bust to David Ojabo, just because there's not enough on tape to see. But he was phenomenal last year in 2021 opposite Aiden Hutchinson. And in that in itself obviously brings question marks, because you just wonder, where defense is so concerned about Gardner Hutch, that Ojabo could feast, you know. But the measurables are all there. He can move. He's lightning quick around that edge. He flattens the arcs of the quarterback better than possibly any edge rusher in this class, actually. He's very quick off the edge there. I think the injuries confirmed it, that he's a project now. But I still think that he could go first round at the bottom end. And it's, again, that thing with the teams who've got those two picks, you know, like the Green Bay Packers of the world, who might be looking for an edge rusher. So they could go wide receiver at 22, and then I think they've got 29 again as well. And they could look at a job and think, you know what, we're in a comfortable position in Green Bay. You know, we're happy to take on that project and get the upside, potentially, for a loss of a season. So there's that. And Bam Adebayo, I mean, if you asked me at the beginning, at the end of the season last season, I would argue that perhaps he's like a late day three, maybe even undrafted kid. Mm. But he's got all the measurables. Like, he's massive dude. His arms are ridiculous. The wingspan on that guy, it's like a circus tent.
It's a Canadian goose.
Yeah, he's crazy. Great, and he's fast as well. So he's got all the measurables. And then he went to the East-West Shrine Game. He was invited to the Shrine Game, and I saw him there, and he balled out. He's really stepped up this thing. I think you're looking at maybe the fourth or fifth round for Bam Adebayo now. And he's not even a guy I've studied that well. But to see his growth, I mean, he came to Utah quite early. So he's a little bit more exposure to the sport, I guess, than maybe Ojabo has. But just to see his growth literally from the end of the season to now just shows the dedication he's got to being a professional footballer. And obviously, I think that translates sometimes to certainly what scouts and team and players think. They love these kind of all-star games at the end of the season, the Shrine Game, the NFLPA Bowl, the Senior Bowl, because it just shows, for someone like Adebayo, who not necessarily, I mean, Pac-12 was really affected by COVID. I think they had a four-game season, so he's got a lot less on tape again than other people. You know, to go out there and play against the best of the rest of his year, essentially going into the NFL and to dominate like he did do at the Shrine Game. Mm. I think that's important. And we often see players, you know, like people like Boye Mafe is having a stock rise because of how early he did at Senior Bowl. You know, Cole Strange is another one. And I think you're going to find that similar deal with Olusegun, but to a small level. I think he's still a day three pick, but I think you will hear his name called now, which was probably not necessarily the truth before, say, sort of the back of his college game team.
Yeah. So, Robin, you got any other questions or prospects you want to talk about? Or
Yeah. One last question, because the Bills group chat won't forgive us if we don't mention this name. And I'm pretty sure Simon is the man to ask about this. Tight end position. Now we've got a real hit in Dawson Knox, but obviously, you know, can he repeat what he's done in 2021? We've got OJ Howard. That's great. That's only a 1-year deal. So again, tight end, possible sneaky need. And I'm just going to say Jelani or Jelani Woods. what do you think? We've had there's been a lot of chatter on the group about him. The consensus seems to be third round, but what do you think?
Third round's a good shout, and this basically makes my point about these All-Star games, because Jelani Woods has absolutely gone bonkers in this pre-draft process by showing in these games. I mean, again, you want to talk about the RAS score, the relative athletic score, 9.97 out of 10. Oh. He's the fourth. I mean, it's well measurable in a lot of different measurables, but he's the fourth
overall
on tight end since 1987. So that just shows the measurables. You know, he's a kid at Virginia who's moved around a bit, hasn't he? He's played different positions. So tight end, I think he came to it late, and he's still got to improve a little bit as a pass catcher, a route runner, and a blocker. So he's only scratching the surface of what he can be. But the reason why everyone's getting excited about Jelani Woods is he's one of those kind of like move tight end guys who basically is a pseudo big receiver. And I think even now, people can throw him out there, ask him to do different things, and he's really going to put a stress on the seams of defenses and even deep as well. He's got that speed. And when you pair that with his kind of like the size and the length at catch point, I've seen comps to Darren Waller. I think I am comped into Darren Waller. You know, he's a guy who really is dynamic at a position that you don't expect it, because obviously there are a few elite tight ends in the NFL now, you know, with Travis Kelce and the likes. But for most part, most teams have a big dude who can block and catch things within 10, 15 yards of the quarterback.
Yeah.
Is that rare breed who can do more than that? Who can stretch the field? Who can play from different alignments? And he's not even quite the player he can be yet. And I think that's why people are getting excited about him. I don't think Buffalo Bills are going to spend a third round pick on him, sadly. So I think Bills Mafia might have to look elsewhere. I mean, to be quite frank, an OJ Howard comp might not be too bad, because OJ Howard came into the NFL as a move tight end, and it's not really worked out for him. And I think part of the reason for that is he's not necessarily the blocker that people want.
Yeah.
But the upside for Jelani is, of course, that even if he's not that now, he can be seen if he puts his mind to it, you know. So, yeah, he's a prospect that he's one of the risers. He's not my darling of the tight end position. That would be Chigga Conquo from Maryland, who's like a bowling ball version of a tight end. But that's just me. I do like Jelani Woods, I must say. And he's gonna go on day two, I think, now. You're right. And I think he's going to have a great career. Someone to keep an eye out for.
Nice, cool. No, I mean, Simon, once again, thank you for coming on. I mean, I always love the chats, and we make it an annual thing, getting on just the week before the draft, bring out names and all that, and it's so amazing to do. Where can people find you on the socials and the work you do?
Okay, so we've already mentioned The Touchdown, didn't we? That's the website. Head to thetouchdown.co.uk. Or you can find them on Twitter at TheTouchdownNFL. You can find me on Twitter as well at NFLDraftSci. And just come and follow us and enjoy the next week, because it's going to be a hell of a lot of content going out, and hopefully we'll have some fun with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, Simon, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Appreciate you guys. No worries, guys. Anytime.
And we thank Simon there for a really in-depth look at prospects that the Bills could target in round 1-3. I mean, Robin, what's your take? You took quite a bit out of that.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, I think it was like I was saying, it's finding out just how deep the rabbit hole goes, while at the same time accepting that this is, you know, it is still, lottery is the wrong word. It's the best, most exciting form of educated guessing that you see in North American sports, isn't it? Even with all the research, even with all that, you're still, you know, you're still having a punt on a player. But the fact that there's that much talent out there that we can even allow ourselves, you know, it's my 46th birthday today, and I'm probably not a person who's not in terrible shape, but you can almost talk about people in the fifth or sixth or seventh round, and you just think any of those people could crush me like a twig.
Yeah.
Any of these people would literally blow me away with their speed and their. You just find this filtering and sorting of player data. It's fantastic of what are just the most incredible athletic specimens that you can find with intelligence.
Yeah.
And it's just the standard just seems to go up every year.
So definitely, I mean, obviously how you've linked it in with the fourth, fifth, sixth rounds, guys probably can do a lot more, obviously run you into the ground and all that. This brings us beautifully onto our next interview, which I did with Damon Tolbert, obviously of the Draft Diamonds. Definitely check him out, give him a follow and all that, because we go dive deep into round 4 to 7, maybe a bit of undrafted, and actually give you some names that you may not have heard of, but names that you really want to shout and actually go back and look at the tape. So enjoy this with Damon Tolbert. And joining me on the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, I have the good-looking Talbert in Damon Tolbert, the older cousin of Bill's Ryan Tolbert. Damon, thank you very, very much for coming on the show for me.
Hey, I appreciate it. I can't wait to talk Buffalo football, and you got it right. I am the better looking Talbot, so I appreciate it.
It's gonna be out there. I'll turn to Ryan when I was next speak to him. I'll say, yeah, I've interviewed your cousin. I will say he's a lot more handsome than you.
I appreciate it.
So obviously, for people that don't know Damon and don't follow him and all that, you are the founder of the NFL Draft Diamonds on Twitter, the draft handle Draft Diamonds, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'm the owner of the company, and I've been doing it for about 10 years now. So,
how did you get into it? I mean, obviously, looking at what you do, I mean, you recently, and as you say, your biohazard saying that you're obviously now was one of the scouting directors for the Hula Bowl and all that. How did it really come about all those 10 years ago?
Well, about 10 years ago, I realized that there was a missing link when it came to football, that everyone talked in regards to these top prospects, the players at Georgia and Florida. But the thing was there was a huge gap. No one was talking about the kids at Coastal Carolina or Central Michigan or these small schools. And I know Central Michigan's still an FBS school, but they're being overlooked. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to tap into these schools and really offer services to like give them a platform. Like, everyone's talking about the big Georgia kid or the Alabama kid, but who talks about the kid from Middle Tennessee State or you know, Wisconsin Whitewater? You don't hear about those kids. So I wanted to give them a platform. I started it off, and the players and the fans and the Twitter people really blew it up to what it is today. I mean, I didn't think it would have 100,000 followers ever in my life. So, I mean, definitely, you know, people embraced it, and they've helped with it grow, and it just continues to grow.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of my go-to, especially for the small school stuff, because as you say, you hear everything about obviously going up to round 3, maybe round 4, but then a couple of guys I've looked at, I don't see much coverage going on from the guys like Joe Marino and all the draft dudes on there, and that's why sites like yours, and I say it's really good, and I do watch all the not, I wouldn't say lower end, but the non-fancied bowl games at the end of season, like the Hula Bowl, the Tropic Bowl and all that, because there are diamonds in the rough on there, and it's good that there's people like you and others that actually do cover that a lot more, that really brings this draft season into life, really.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it doesn't matter where you play. NFL teams are going to find you. And you're right. At the end, they're value picks. Anybody can pick a top 150 players. All right. You could pull your name out of a hat and your chances of getting a great player are pretty good if you just write 150 names on the ground. But it's the guys who find the guy as an undrafted free agent, the Fred Jacksons of the world, that really make you grow. I mean, you look at back in when the Bills really, when everybody really followed them, the Stevie Johnson, when the Bills Mafia first began, when it was Stevie Johnson and Fred Jackson, you know, they were both, Stevie Johnson was a late round pick. I mean, he turned into the number one receiver, but Fred Jackson went undrafted, had to go overseas to play. I mean, they're there, and that's what your goal is. If you can find those type of players, that's when you're going to have the most success.
And obviously it's where the scouts really make their money at the end of the day. I mean, let's say you've got the likes of Fred Jackson, you've got Stevie Johnson, you've got these, I hate to use it, but it's an example anyway. Well, no, it's not really an example because he came from big school. I would have said Brady, obviously in sixth round and all that. It shows the scouts really earn their money, and you can pick these players that you fit, but people think, okay, he's not going to be a long-term starter. He's probably going to be a serviceable backup and then turning into pretty much Hall of Fame and Bills Hall of Fame, if we're talking Jackson and Johnson type players. So I guess that's really where Bean and Matt has his scouts really looking and making them earn their money.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where most scouts will keep a job. If you find that diamond in the rough is a late round guy and he ends up blossoming, the team's not going to let you go. They're going to say, this guy did his homework. This is his area that he found this guy. And if you start producing them a lot, that's when you're getting guys like Chris Ballard and guys that are getting opportunities to become GMs because they were finding these diamonds, and they have been for years.
Yeah. So, I mean, before we talk a little bit more on the draft and the draft diamonds, it's nice reference. There's a nice Twitter handle for it. I just want to get your opinion on the Bills' first round, and do you see if any specific position that they could go in? So, I mean, everyone's pegging cornerback, wide receiver on there. Do you see that being set? It's going to be one of those two positions, or do you think there is like a sneaky need somewhere that could be that first round pick?
Yeah. When you look at the 25th pick, they're in kind of a blessed area because at the end of the draft, several teams are going to want to trade up to try to take a quarterback, meaning they get an extra year under his contract. So that helps a team that's a franchise that may be looking for a quarterback. Maybe a team like Carolina, maybe they don't want to take a quarterback early, but in the later round, maybe in the next round they do. So they can maybe trade up to the back end of that first round, offer up draft picks and have the team move back. I think the Bills are going to sit. I think they'll stay at 25. I think they will probably look at the best player available. If a player starts dropping that they love, I wouldn't be shocked if Bean would move up to get him. I wouldn't be shocked if Bean would trade out. And it sounds crazy, but they're kind of in a spot that the really biggest need right now is cornerback too. And Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have already proven when they were in Carolina that they don't really care how they get their corner as long as the corner can produce and listen. And you know, Levi Wallace came in as an undrafted guy, started almost every game since his freshman year, his first year in the league. And now you got to find a replacement for Levi Wallace. Is that possible? Yeah, Dane Jackson's right already on your roster. So is it really a need? It's not like a necessary, we need a corner. But obviously the Bills fans, they see Dane Jackson. They go, is he capable of playing? Well, the coaches already know if he's capable or not. So in my opinion, I think the Bills go best player available in the first round. That could be a safety. That could be a wide receiver. That could be, you know, a running back. What if Breece Hall's there and they're like, oh, I didn't think he was going to get there. I don't think that's the case, but he's a first round capable running back.
Yeah.
I think the Bills are going to sit pretty And I would not, I think the Bills will trade back. If their guy is not there, if there's nobody that's really pretty or sexy to them and they can trade back and get more, I think the Bills will trade back.
Yeah.
But if I was going to have to, if I had to pick, is that what you're doing to me?
That's just what I was about to say. If you had a choice of anyone that obviously realistically that's going to be there at 25, what would your direction be if you were around Brandon Bean?
It's going to depend on who falls to you. I know the three big names that being mentioned in Buffalo and their top 25 pick is obviously Louis Cine from Georgia. You have Andrew Booth from Clemson. Breece Hall's another guy that's mentioned. I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm going to take N'Kobe Dean, if he falls to me, from Georgia, the linebacker.
Okay.
He's a super fast linebacker. I know the Bills only use that two linebacker set in a lot of plays with Milano and Tremaine, but I think that he adds a whole nother element to your off or to your defense. Last year, we ended up having to use AJ Klein quite a bit. This kid's a way faster, way more physical player that can cover the entire field. If he's there at 25, I'm taking him.
Do you see him as an heir to Edmonds, or do you feel they could actually move to like a three set if they went with N'Kobe Dean? Because I know there've been Twitter talks from just out of the way Twitter handles saying that Edmonds is trash, Edmonds got to go. Do you see Dean as a potential replacement, or do you think it works alongside Edmonds and Milano if they went with him at 25?
Well, I think you add all three elements to the field and you let them play all together. And I think what it does is it gives you options. You don't have to have – you can go to a true 4-3. You can go to a 3-4 if you want to, and you add another linebacker in the mix. I think that at the end of the day, they're going to take the best player available. I think personally, I think N'Kobe Dean is one of the best players in this draft. I may be crazy. I don't know. But I personally, if I'm sitting at 25 and he's there, I'm taking him. If he's not there, I'm trading out. And that's just my set. I don't think Andrew Booth is, they do love ACC corners and D-backs. So I wouldn't be shocked if they do end up going Andrew Booth, but I think they'll trade back. I think you can get Andrew Booth in the beginning of the second round and still end up getting your guy and picking up extra draft capital.
Yeah, well, I'll say you're not crazy for a person wanting to go for N'Kobe Dean. I mean, most people actually know my stance. For 25, I've always wanted Kyrie Lamb of Florida. So, and I've always better smash my hand on the table to for him at 25. So I don't think you're crazy or weird or anything like that for thinking of having N'Kobe Dean at 25.
Well, I can tell you right now, Elam's a stud too. And he's another one that's been mentioned quite a bit on mock drafts and stuff to the Bills. I just personally, if you ask me, I think Elam will be there at the beginning of round two. I think if you look at Breece Hall, Louis Cine, Andrew Booth, Elam, all those guys, and if you look at their top 30 visits and the guys that they have in, all those guys will be in the beginning of round two. If you let them, if you move back, they're all going to be there.
Yeah.
And I think why not pick up an extra pick, get an extra offensive lineman or whatever you need in the draft and move forward. Draft picks are valuable with the amount of cap space that they're spending on Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. Draft picks are going to become super valuable right now to the Bills. It's not going to be veterans. Veterans cost money. Veterans are expensive. But let's say, for example, watch this trade scenario. Let's say they go back to the second round. Let's say they go back 5 or 6 picks, 7 picks, 10 picks, whatever it may be, right?
Yeah.
They go back 10 picks. And when they go back them 10 picks, let's say they go, hey, this is what we're going to do. We go back, we're going to get an additional second round pick from this year, plus an additional 5th round pick. Yeah. Now they have 2 second round picks and 2 5th round picks or whatever it may be. I can't remember exactly what picks they have. But if they do that, now let's say they go Breece Hall And then in the with their original second that they come back to, plus they get draft pick from next year probably, because that's what it's going to cost for a team to move up. So you get an additional draft pick in next year, plus you trade back. You get, let's say you get Breece Hall, which is the running back that you really like. And then in the end of the second, you pick up John Metchie, wide receiver from Alabama that's just sitting there. And then in the third round, you get another player. So you just added three players potentially that can come in and help your offense. Because if you look at all their players that they brought in on top 30 visits, almost 15 or 16 of them, I think, of the 30 are all second to third round players.
Yeah.
Why are they bringing in so many in that value range? It's because they want to know who's going to be available. They're looking for guys that are falling.
Yeah, it's true. And obviously, trading down as well, you've got that draft capital to trade back up into that third round if there's guys going to be dropping there. So I think, and that's why I always say to people that Bills, as we all say, don't have too many needs, really, too many holes really to fill in there, that they can go best player available or even draft back and get those cheaper guys in the way of their 4 years rather than 5 years, and obviously it gets salary cap a little bit cheaper on there, but get more of them in that range that they've really picked up on the top 30 visits.
Yeah, well, you know, just by looking in the past, you know that the Bills absolutely target their players that they want in the top 30 visits. They absolutely do that. And we learned today just on draft, I mean, Spencer Burford from UTSA, who hasn't been mentioned yet, he's a new guy that just, he was there this week. I heard, you know, from multiple sources that he was here this week for a private visit. So he's a top 30 player. Where does he fall? Second to third round. What is he? He's a versatile offensive lineman from UTSA. So at the end of the day, they're looking at interior line. If you look at their top 30 visits, you have cornerback, tight end, linebacker, offensive guard, wide receiver, and safety. Them are the positions that are really falling there. If you go through the positions, top two corners probably are Stingley and Ahmad Gardner. Will they be there at 25? Probably not. Tight end, the best tight end's Trey McBride. Will he be there? Yes, but you can move back to the 25. Linebacker, the best linebacker is N'Kobe Dean, in my opinion. And if he's sitting there at 25, I think you steal him. Guard, I don't think there's a guard worth taking at 25. Wide receiver, there's some guys like Jameson Williams that could fall because of an injury. But if not, maybe he's a guy that they're looking for in a second. And then it's safety. You have a safety. Is there really a safety worth the first-round pick? So when you look at their needs, them are the biggest needs, in my opinion. By looking at their needs, I think personally, if N'Kobe Dean falls, you jump on him all day long. They're bringing in guys like Chad Muma. They're bringing in guys like Brian Asamoah. If you're bringing in guys like that are in the second and third, why would they not want N'Kobe Dean, who's sitting there in the first and the 25th pick?
No, exactly. And that is a really good thing. I mean, they're looking, they know their target areas. And obviously, if we get into it a bit, just a tiny bit more, where they earn the money will be those fourth to seventh and even undrafted guys on there. And in with you, and obviously the work you do for Hula Bowl, and all the time that you actually work and cover the smaller school guys, is there anyone that you think that the Bills could target going into the draft, main say from four to seven round?
Yeah, there's some really interesting prospects. There's a kid by the name Isaiah Likely. I think he'll probably be a day three pick, 4 to 7 in that range. He's a tight end. He was a super athletic tight end that really tore it up at Coastal Carolina. He's in it. Like I said, you know, the Bills did get OJ Howard, but they have two tight ends that'll be free agents at the end of next year. So, you know, obviously that becomes a need. It becomes something that you could add to the tight end room. You're going to want to keep Dawson Knox. So in my opinion, you know, if you can add a younger guy that can come in and can stretch the field, Dawson Knox can play the shallow game. You get another tight end that can spread it. Isaiah Likely is a guy. You know, Jelani Woods is another guy that's a big, huge target, 6'7" tight end. from Virginia that I loved. We absolutely wanted this guy so bad at the Hula Bowl, and he ended up going to another game, which, bless his heart, I wish he should have came to us. But, you know, he's another guy that I would have loved to have. And then he blazes at the combine and tears it up. And he's like, people are talking about him being an offensive tackle. They're crazy. That kid would be an amazing tight end in the NFL. That's just tight end position. But you go on deeper in the draft, there's a kid named Matt Waletzko. He's a super long, athletic offensive tackle. Bills love that. Bills love these long, athletic guys. I mean, Spencer Brown, I mean, he's tenacious. He's mean. If they can get a value pick in a kid like him that he falls, Bills held a private workout with him. So Matt Waletzko is a kid from North Dakota that he's probably better as a passing blocker than he is run, but he's just so athletic and long. Like, his arms are massive. So, I mean, he would be a great fit if you're going to look for a swing tackle late. And I think the Bills had one or two swing tackles that they kind of brought in, a little bit smaller size, so they'll probably be kicking interior with their tackle position, as being that they're going to want big guys. So, I mean, those are just a couple names right there. Personal guy, like, guys that I'm like really high on that I love. If we're going to go in the small school aspect, I think, I would say there's a tight end by the name of Andrew Ogletree. He plays at Youngstown State. No one's talking about this kid at all. He's been on 5 top 30 visits. He's a freak. He came to the Hula Bowl and he was the best player at the damn Hula Bowl. He was a man among boys. He scored a touchdown in the game. He was eaten all practice long. No one could cover him. There was no linebacker that could do anything with him. And he was a freak of nature. Like, he is a freak. He's jacked up. He looks the part, and he was 6'5", I think, 255. And like, he's just like, he caught everything. And he was so damn athletic. I love that kid. There was a corner that came to the Hula Bowl that just chiseled like a rock. His name's Christian Holmes. No one's talking about him. 2 years ago, this kid was projected as a second round pick, and he didn't come out. He stayed at school. He's from Oklahoma State. He came to the Hula Bowl. He's another kid that could absolutely become a steal for somebody late in the draft. He looks the part. He absolutely plays pissed off and motivated. I could see him going and tearing it up. There's a couple more guys. I'll just give a couple more. I'll give three more. I'll give Joey Blunt from Virginia. He's a safety. With Poyer holding out and Poyer kind of doing his thing, they might need a safety that's athletic, that can come down in the box play. Joey Blunt and Micah Hyde would be exact. That'd be fun. If you have time, Google what Joey Blunt looks like and put him next to Micah Hyde. They're like twins almost, damn near. They're light-skinned kids. They can fly around the ball. They have a lot of energy. They're happy. They're always around the ball. Joey Blunt was constantly picking off passes. He'd be a good one, a good fit there late in the draft. I really like Cole Kelly, the quarterback from Southeastern Louisiana. A lot of people don't, but he's more of a pocket passer. With Josh Allen being the youngest quarterback on the Bills roster right now, maybe they'll try to go with a younger guy for the practice squad than an older guy. I don't know. But if they are looking for a younger guy, maybe they take a Cole Kelly, who's like a 6'7" gunslinger. He was the Walter Payton Award winner at the FCS level. I really think he could be a solid player. And then last, I would give you a kid, no one's really talking about him. His name's Delonte Hood. Delonte Hood from Peru State. Now, I know that you're probably like, what the heck? I didn't even know that was a school. You're right. It is a school, but there's not many people that know about it. But this kid is a blazer, a 4.3 40 guy. He can return kicks and punts, and he's so athletic. He's switched multiple schools, but he would be a great investment for somebody. If you're looking for a late round free agent guy to bring him on the roster to see what he's capable of, you know, he's athletic enough to play and his production is insane. He's had a lot of interceptions in his career. So he would be, them were just some late round stud sleeper guys that I like, that I think the Bills would be crazy not to at least explore and look at. Maybe they'll have concerns with some of them, but at the end of the day, they're looking to get faster, quicker, right? Because if you look, Chad Muma, Brian Asamoah, what are they? They're fast off the ball linebackers, right? Yeah. What's N'Kobe Dean? Fast off the ball linebacker. You look at the tight ends. They're looking for big, physical, in guys that can spread the field. They're looking at Trey McBride, Isaiah Likely, Jelani Woods. They're looking at wide receivers, game-changing wide receivers that are injured. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
The wide receivers they're looking at are injured. The Jameson Williams, John Metchie, they're looking for value picks and wide receivers. So guys that fall to us, we're going to steal them. Then you look at offensive guards. They're looking at offensive tackles that convert to offensive guards. They're looking for guys that could play tackle if we need them to, if somebody gets hurt. But we're going to convert them to offensive guards in our system.
Yeah.
So they're looking into a groom fashion, which means they're probably looking at round 3 or 4 for them guys. So once you start looking at them, and then they're looking at safety, that's just kind of like, got to do our diligence because we don't know what Poyer's going to do.
No, exactly.
That's where I think, that's what I think the Bills are doing. Now, could be wrong, but that's my opinion.
No, that's fair. I mean, that's why I like talking to yourself and other guys that do deal with the draft, because they have their own what's the best word to call it? Not vision, their own theories, let's put it that way, on where the Bills could go. They have their own type of guys in there. I mean, there are a couple of guys that I looked when I watched the Hula Bowl that some of them didn't stand out as much, but I've heard about them that like, which one is Fresno State's Aaron Mosby. He didn't go to the Hula Bowl, but you got Florida and A&M's Marquise Bell. Obviously, we talk safety and all that. And even like the guy from Buffalo as a running back, Kevin Marks. I mean, there are guys, and one more for me was the cornerback. I think he had a really good Hula Bowl. Was Taylor Hawkins of San Diego State?
Yeah, he's huge. Huge athletic, physical player. I mean, Kevin Marks was down here as well. You said Mosby. Mosby's a stud, man. A lot of teams talk to him. He was one of the hottest commodities here at the Hula Bowl. He had a lot of teams interested in him. Will he last? So he'll be a late-round guy. Like you said, Marquise Bell. Man, that dude is a hammer. He comes down and just lights you up.
Yeah.
He does not hold back. He's a FAMU rattler, and he's a great football player. So, you know, definitely there's some great football players. This draft is deep. It has a lot of players, but it's not as deep as far as talent, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So you're not, I don't think late in the draft, you're going to find a lot of home run guys. I think you're going to find decent guys, but not home run guys. Cause I don't think it's as deep as what everybody else thinks. Even though there's a lot of players, I don't think there's a lot of home run players.
Yeah. So majority of the fourth, or let's go fifth to undrafted, you're really looking for those guys that have the physical attributes to be an NFL player, not necessarily in the position that they actually played in, but they could, with coaching and not under any pressure, to come in like your first three, maybe four rounds to actually start and make a difference, to come in and actually either learn a new position or use that time wisely to take advantage of all the NFL strength and conditioning and NFL coaching to really get them up and running.
Yeah, definitely. See, the late rounds are for grooming. You're looking to bring a guy in, groom him into your system. Maybe he fits your system. Maybe he's played in a system that's similar to yours. You bring him in, you groom him. The first three round guys, you're expecting them to play.
Yeah.
You're expecting them to come in and play. If I take you in the second round, unless you've been hurt, I'm expecting you to play for me. I mean, that's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
You have to hit on those rounds. But then if you can bring in a guy late round, like Marquez Stevenson, right? We brought him in last year. Mm-hmm. Athletic is all get out. He's a good return man. He really hasn't done anything at the wide receiver position, right?
Yeah.
So what will we see from him this year? Is there going to be a growth that if he's working with Josh Allen, will he grow into that role? We're going to find out. And that's where you groom him, because, you know, the Bills lost some wide receivers this year. Can he come in and fill the gap? Can he come in and do something? Or is it just going to be the Isaiah McKenzie show again?
No, so
that's kind of like, that's what you're bringing dudes in for. So that's what it's all about.
Yeah, there's one guy I like and I've actually seen was lowest good was Sam Houston State. Jaquiz Azard, I think I pronounced his first name right. As a guy that could feel be an Isaiah McKenzie type guy and actually I think he has dealt with punts and kicks on occasions. And that's someone that obviously we've got Marcus Stevenson and Brendan Bean and Sean McGovern come out and said that they're looking for speed. And when you've got guys like Stevenson, if they got Ezard on there just to actually sit behind Diggs, sit behind Davis and McKenzie and learn the nuances there, they could actually then become more of a hot commodity going forward in a few years' time.
Yeah, and that you want that. You need that. You want guys that can spread the field, but you also want a guy that can come across the field on a drag route or something to that nature. Like Cole Beasley was always open because he was a great route runner. He was not fast, but he'll juke you out your pants, right? Yeah. So if you don't have that ability, what did they use Isaiah McKenzie on a lot of the times? Drags, screens, the little run play in the backfield. If they do those type of things, and they continue to grind and do that, they're going to blow up. And I think personally, having a guy like McKenzie doing those type of things is going to be huge. So that's where you want to continue that and keep growing on that battle.
So one last player I want to talk about before we wrap it up. And when I first saw the college he went to, I thought, hang on, Scrubs don't have and Sacred Heart Hospital don't have a football team on there. And there's running back Julius Chestnut. I mean, when I saw the school Sacred Heart, I'm thinking, wait, that's where Scrubs was set. That's where the TV show Scrubs was set. I mean, what can you say about Chestnut? I saw a few tapes of him, and he does look like a guy that, with a bit of development and learning from Singletary, from Johnson, and whoever if we do pick a running back in the first three rounds, learn from them whilst being a seventh undrafted guy just to learn. What's he like, and would he make an impact and potentially for a Bills, knowing what Cromer would actually pick up on the blocking schemes?
He is a big back. He's long, and he hits the hole with tenacity. He doesn't hold back. He came to the Hula Bowl, and when he came down to our event, you know, he was third on the depth chart when we started him off, not because it was talent or whatever. We just had him listed as third. Our coach Smith came to me, and the head coach of the Hula Bowl, Mike Smith, who was with the Falcons, they said, hey man, this damn Chestnut kid, how is he on the third on the list? And we said, we just put him on the list. We didn't put him in order. Nothing. It wasn't like we designed who would start. He goes, hell no, I want to make that guy my starter. So, yeah. He immediately jumped straight off the paperwork to a head coach in the NFL. So, I mean, that's pretty big. I mean, he's a great kid, amazing family, grew up. He's very respectable, crushed his tests for his personality, absolutely crushed him, had a great job down there. And he catches the ball so smoothly out the backfield. So he could be a guy definitely that would be a late round steal that Buffalo could end up taken. I think they'll target somebody a lot higher that's younger, that's not younger, but I'm saying a lot higher, that has a more of a priority. I think the Bills will probably go fourth, fifth round, Hassan Haskins, someone like in that nature, or that in that realm of player, Isaiah Pacheco. I think they'll try to find a player that can complement and really work in this, become a system running back, but also become a down the dog if they need him to be.
Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, Damon, thank you ever so much for coming on, talking Bills, talking late round sleepers and draft diamonds. For our followers who actually haven't been following you, where can they find the work you do and find you on the socials?
Yeah, so NFLDraftDiamonds.com is the website. My Instagram is NFLDraftDiamonds, and my Twitter is @DraftDiamonds. Make sure you follow us on Facebook as well. If you have Facebook, it's NFL Draft Diamonds. Hit the like button, trying to get the Facebook crowd going. You know, during the draft, you got to try to boost them all up. So I'm trying to do that. But if there's anything that I can do for y'all, and, you know, let me know once it goes posted, and we'll drop it on the site as well, man. And I wish you the best.
Thank you very much. And Damon, once again, thank you for joining us on the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues. And have a very good rest of the afternoon.
You too, my brother. God bless you, man.
God bless. And there's Damon there from the Draft Diamonds talking all things round 4-7. And really, I think we're getting to a point now where I think we're taking it all in, getting all prepared, doing mocks, researching, and just how much are you really looking forward to this this final week after these after obviously getting to know all these players over the last month or two?
I think I'm looking forward to just finding out. I mean, obviously, I'm looking forward to being correct, and I'm looking forward to double dipping cornerback or moving up for Sauce Gardner, and then maybe trading back for a linebacker or something like that. But I'm kind of looking forward to being wrong, and I'm looking forward to finding out why and where of my wrongness. So I'm looking forward to finding out what Brandon Bean was actually thinking at the time and what steps he'd taken, because it's relatively logical and straightforward to work backward once the pick comes in. Because in those couple of days after, when they review it, you realise what they were thinking about at the time. And so I'm interested in finding out what their thought process is when those picks come in.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it as well. I mean, especially with the draft weekend itself, just staying up watching every single round, actually constantly on Twitter after that round seven's finished, seeing which undrafted free agents go in there, and also looking forward to, hopefully, fingers crossed, the Bills actually taking Kaia Elam.
Oh, yes.
Whether it be round one or whether they trade back or anything like that, yeah. But they will take him, and if they do, I will sing a merry she shanty or something like that. But it's going to be very interesting, and we'll be back with more reviews and all that within the next week. So, Robin, where can they find you on the social?
And at Robin C. Armstrong on Twitter.
And I'm Matt SW86. And obviously, keep following us at UK _ Bills, at RWBB _podcast, Buffalo Bills UK on Facebook and YouTube, at UK _Bills on Instagram. Keep liking, following, subscribing, spread the word, show us love. And for me, Matt, that's Robin saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three.